Hello, everybody. It's Tuesday, April 9th. I hope everyone had a good eclipse yesterday, but Chapo's back at it. It's me, Felix, and Amber coming in today. And at the top of today's show, I was hoping, Felix and Amber, you could straighten up two things for me that I'm curious about. I don't know the backstory on them, so I just throw it out there for discussion. First, a straight man beaten in gay city for refusing to twerk. Felix, Amber, go. What's going on with this, and what should I know about it?
Yeah, so this is 100% true. Any community notes you see that try to imply that there's no such thing as a gay city, that this man wasn't beaten up for refusing to twerk, that's all disinformation from gay city's traditional enemies, places like Turkey and Indonesia. These have historically been adversaries of gay city, going all the way back to the times of Tamerlane, when gay city was the last holdout not to be taken by Tamerlane. Gay city is, you know, it's, as we say, it's a, you know, a land of contrasts. They have like a pretty interesting civil society, but as you see, they have a sort of like Singapore type thing for people who don't twerk.
Harsh physical discipline of people who don't comply.
Yeah, they had sort of like a Lee Kuan Yew type figure who put that in place. There is a travel advisory for people going to gay city. So, you know, if you're straight, just watch out. I'm not saying don't visit, but definitely take precautions.
Now, Felix, when I asked this question, what is gay city? Where is gay city? All of the responses I got were, it's you, you're living in it, you are gay city. So I'm wondering, like, being in Brooklyn, now dubbed gay city, am I in any danger as a straight man? Or should I just comply when people ask me to twerk, or will I be assaulted?
It's actually a great honor when people in gay city ask an outsider to twerk.
Yeah, it's a diplomatic gesture. You don't live in gay city. Gay city is an invite-only city. Now, I haven't read the gay city news lately. I can't keep up these days. I would have to ask around to know if it's true, but I feel like I would have heard about it right now.
We used to have a column in the Gay City Alt Weekly, but unfortunately, it's since been sold off, and you know, it's really more of a, you know, it's just kind of an advertising rag now.
I know. I mean, there's no journalism in Gay City, and I think they were the last holdout. But you know, everything's getting bought up. It's big tech. It's everything. You know, there's a lot of good Gay City reporters out there. I don't know where they're going to go. New York Post?
Well, okay. Now that we've got that sorted out, the second thing that I'm curious about is, why are J. Cole fans in their feelings? I'm seeing a lot of those. I'm seeing a lot of J. Cole fans saying that J. Cole has taken an L and that they're in their feelings about it. I don't know what's going on with Mr. J. Cole. Felix, you're sort of my sort of go-to for the current day music scene. What's going on with J. Cole and his fans?
Well, okay, so do you know how Kendrick Lamar, I mean, we're living in the long 2014, so this is just like sort of what happened with Control all over again, right? Gone are the days of peace when J. Cole, Kendrick, and Drake could all get on a song with ASAP Rocky and talk about how they all love pussy. That's done.
They all have a problem. They have a problem.
Yeah.
These fucking bad bitches. They got a problem with that. If they've solved this problem, or have they created new problems for themselves?
Well, there are new problems because these are now all 47-year-old men. And they're, you know, they're done having sex, and now they're going to talk about what really matters. Who's the better rapper? And Kendrick Lamar, obviously, he put out a you guys can look this up on Wikipedia if you don't know the definition. It's called diss track. It stands for disrespectful track.
Oh my god.
No. The coarseness of our civil discourse. Yeah.
But J. Cole responded, and in his song, he clearly, like, he kind of got he, like, didn't know how many albums Kendrick Lamar made. Like, that was part of it. It was just sort of, it was a bad response, right? And then J. Cole did something you never want to see anyone do. He did the Joe Biden, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. He was like, I feel bad insulting Kendrick Lamar because I like him so much. And it's like, well, he started it. Like, what the fuck? And he apologized. And that's just like not anything you want to see from your favorite rapper. I'm not saying that your favorite rapper, like, God forbid that you are a fan of like The Game, where every week it's like The Game challenges Omarion for B2K to a duel to the death or whatever, like bipolar insanity is going on with him. But you want them to at least be like, hey, I stand by my song, you know? And it does not instill confidence.
I mean, here's my suggestion for the hip hop community. And I think this is a real opportunity for you, Felix. What do they need? Mediation, HR. I think they could hire you on as a consultant. I mean, of course, they all need to call a summit and sit around a giant, like, Dr. Strangelove table and agree to this. And, you know, you come in, you present bylaws, you talk about how to call someone in, not out. You know, I think you're the answer to this disrespect.
No more disrespect.
I would love, well, I mean, like, I...
You can tell him how to use I statements.
Well, I would love to. I would love to remove clapping from the rap world in general.
And this would be a good start. Fingers.
Yeah.
A lot of rappers have sensory issues. People don't talk about that.
That's why MF Doom wore that mask.
I guess the rap music has changed. I mean, like, I think just the disrespect has come to a boiling point, and I applaud J. Cole for his apology for being disrespectful. I will just say, gone are the days in which 50 Cent wouldn't do a diss song. He would just release a video recording of your mother sleeping in her bed at night.
Yeah, 50 Cent, yeah, 50 Cent, like, whenever... The thing with Rick Ross was, like, insane. He just bypassed making any song and was like, here's a video of me fucking like the mother of three of your kids.
Yeah. 50. Nobody did dissing. Nobody took dissing like 50 Cent did, but I don't know. I think a lot of the old heads will be like, no, we want more disrespect in rap music. Let's take it back to the old days. But I think we're turning a corner here. I think maybe the eclipse has something to do with it, but we're entering an era of no disrespect in music.
Mm.
And I'd like to see that continue. Now that I've got that cleared up, I would like to talk about something that we did not address on last week's show, but it has been sort of a, I don't know, like it's been described as a turning point in the Israel-Gaza war. I'm talking about the triple tap of the Jose Andres aid convoy in Gaza, the killing of 7 aid workers, including an American citizen. And like this has been, like I said, it's been sort of framed as a turning point, at least in the media management of the war. I don't know if this is a turning point in terms of policy. I mean, like, they seem to have opened up another border crossing to get aid trucks in, but like this does seem to be mostly symbolic. But then you have people like Nancy Pelosi signing on to, like, you know, to say, hey, we have to cut off military aid to Israel. But I was just like trying to understand all of this, and I'd like to share. There was an article in the Financial Times by Edward Luce that I thought really did a brilliant job of sort of capturing why this moment is different, and like, you know, why people in Washington feel differently about the killing of these 7 people as opposed to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of others. So this is from the Israel's Jose Andres problem. This is by Edward Luce, writing in the Financial Times. The subhead is, will the killing of 7 world central kitchen workers prompt Biden to take action against Netanyahu's government? It begins like this. One of the few high points for me of Washington's grim pandemic lockdown in 2002 was a lunch with the FT that I did with Jose Andres. Because of the rules, we had to do it on Zoom, but even that had its upside. The Spanish chef and world-renowned humanitarian was eating at one of his outlets in Virginia Beach. I was sitting in my home office with Mexican food from one of his pop-up restaurants. At the end of our session, I asked what his greeting and goodbye rule was during the age of coronavirus. At the time, people were annoyingly clinking elbows, which struck me as precisely the wrong sneeze-ridden part of the body to be using. Mm. Andre stood up, straightened himself out, stared into the camera, then pounded his barrel chest, shouting, I give you my heart. I give you my heart. From almost anyone else, Andre's theatrical gesture would have come across as contrived. From him, however, it was utterly sincere. Very few people have give their hearts to the extent that Andre's does. I have been thinking about him, as have so many others, after seven of his colleagues, what he calls angels, were killed in three Israeli drone strikes earlier this week. Since last October, Andres' World Kitchen has supplied 43 million meals to Palestinians trapped in that enclave, which is almost 20 meals per person. I don't have a complete list, but I would not be surprised if this exceeds all other non-governmental organizations combined. Either way, it's a safe bet that only UNRWA, boycotted by Israel and now the U.S., would have supplied more food to the Gaza Strip than the World Central Kitchen. It goes on like this, but it says here, the latest incident has also affected Joe Biden in a way earlier ones did not. Put simply, Andres is a Washington celebrity. He was one of the pioneers of high-quality restaurants in the early 1990s in a Washington that had a well-deserved reputation for dowdy food. Andres Jaleo introduced Spanish-style tapas food to America's capital. In 2016, his restaurant Mini Bar was one of Washington's first batch to merit a two-star Michelin award. Among others, Nancy Pelosi, the former U.S. Speaker, has nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize. When I spoke to Andres during the pandemic, he was keeping dozens of local restaurants alive by ordering food deliveries from them to supply homeless shelters, hospital staff, and other essential workers. So I was just very taken by that description of, like, why does this matter now? It's because he introduced tapas to Washington, D.C. And you don't kill someone, or you don't kill the friends of someone who operates Mini Bar and Jaleo in Washington, D.C., a city mostly known for bad food.
Well, I mean, before then, you have to understand they were eating the food of the founding fathers, of the Puritans, and of, like, I don't know, like, whatever weird warm sushi they ate in the movie Wall Street. Like, there, it was like pureed turnips and shit. So, I mean, if they're going to listen to anyone, it's going to be the celebrity chef, because they're such an insecure, dumbass city that the one thing that they have is cool. What do they have, like hardcore in the 80s? No, it's a shitty city. If the celebrity chef can fucking, it's not a city. It's America's office park. If that's what it takes, I'm down with that.
It has been, like, disheartening that, like, after, you know, God only knows the death count, but, like, that this was kind of it. This was the breaking point for normal countries to open the floodgates. I mean, because they haven't just come out about this. This has, like, caused a bunch of more normal countries and really, like, most lawmakers to actually use the genocide word.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, it's terrible, but, like, you would hope that the tens of thousands that were killed before that would have provoked something. But even on the Israeli side, I think they do at least recognize how badly they fucked up with this one, because their response to this is, I mean, it's pure anguish, but also, like, the, like, mainstream theory now seems to be that Hamas provoked them into doing this. The thing that they have done at least, like, yeah, 20 times before, fucking annihilating aid trucks with cruise missiles.
I mean, like, it has provoked some other strange reactions in the media. Like, for instance, like, the New York Times dropping the passive voice when they talk about who killed these people. And I'm looking at a CNN headline right now that just says, videos and eyewitness accounts cast doubt on Israel's timeline of deadly Gaza aid delivery, talking about the flower massacre. And it just seems like, yeah, like, I think it's a tipping point in so much as I think that there's a lot of people who just need... they need permission from the media to voice the feelings that they know are true. So, like, I think a lot of people have just been like, this is really bad and this seems really evil for a long time. But, like, I think they need for sensible people, they need the data to comport with, like, their opinion. So, like, now that the data's come in and Israel kills aid workers seemingly on purpose, they can say, oh, now maybe we should consider cutting off military aid. Or, like, Elizabeth Warren comes out and says, I think what's happening in Gaza will be remembered as a genocide, even after she voted to cut off aid to UNRWA. But, like, it just seems like there's sort of, like, not, again, in policy, because I haven't heard much from the Biden administration about this. And, like, it seems like Israel is still going to attack Rafah, and they're still going to basically try to, you know, prevent Sorry. Was that Amber?
I was just saying, I mean, like, as much as I hope it's a sea change, like 4 days ago, I was looking at the FT and headline, Israel details, quote, grave mistake in killing of 7 Gaza aid workers. Military says 2 officers dismissed over strikes on World Central Kitchen vehicles. So I don't know. I'm not a huge optimist about it. Maybe if we got more chefs, maybe we need more luxury chefs. Maybe that's the army we need. I think it's a good sign that like, you know, these horrible lib morons are finally feeling some pressure. But I mean, what is that going to amount to? Is it really going to happen? Do you think? And like, I hate to be the person, but it's kind of, just because there are survivors of a genocide doesn't mean it was a victory.
I mean, yeah, I remain skeptical like you, Amber. Like, that's what I said. I think it's like a turning point in people's and how the media covers this and like people's perception of it. And that like this provides a certain permission for people to say like, hey, this is really bad. Maybe we should stop. But yeah, like I have not seen any change in policy that would match up with this yet.
A lot of lip service, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, I mean, this is horrible. Like, and like the idea that it was an accident is pretty ridiculous too. I mean, they hit 3 different cars with 3 different missiles.
Yeah.
And it's also something that they've done again. We've lost count of how many times they've done it in this go around alone. I mean, these are far from the first aid trucks they've hit since October.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, I think it's just like a turning point in like how much more difficult it will be for them to continue to pretend like, you know, Israel's doing this for their self-defense or, you know, they're fighting to free the hostages or whatever. Or like, and it really does blow a hole in the idea that like, hey, we keep asking, you know, hey, there's nothing we can do as far as opening up these aid crossings. It's like, it seems like the pressure they put on them, they were just like, hey, could you open up 1 aid crossing after killing 7 people who are like, including an American citizen? And they were like, okay, sure, fine. Mm. And then they got that done pretty quickly. But like, you know, the point is that like all the aid crossings should be open and like all the military aid needs to stop now, like yesterday. Moving on from the aid convoy disaster for Israel. Here's a story from state politics and involving a Senate race. And this is a good story for us because it involves one of our favorite topics. Navy SEALs lying. Headline, Montana GOP Senate candidate says he lied to Ranger about gunshot wound in 2015. Tim Sheehy, a charismatic former Navy SEAL who was the Republican.
I don't think you're allowed to say that anymore. That's rude.
a charismatic former Navy SEAL who was the Republican candidate in a U.S. Senate race in Montana that could determine control of the chamber has cited a gunshot wound he received in combat that he said left a bullet in his right arm as evidence of his toughness. Quote, I got thick skin, though it's not thick enough. I have a bullet stuck in this arm from Afghanistan, Sheehy said in a video of a December campaign event posted on social media, posting to his right forearm. It was one of several inconsistent accounts Sheehy had shared about being shot while deployed, and in October 2015, more than a year after he left active duty, he told a different story. After a family visit to Montana's Glacier National Park, he told the National Park Service ranger that he accidentally shot himself in the right arm that day with his Colt 45 revolver, when his Colt 45 revolver fell and discharged while he was loading a vehicle in the park, according to a record of the episode filed in the U.S. District Court for the U.S. District Court for the District of Montana. The self-inflicted gunshot left a bullet lodged in Sheehy's right forearm, according to the written description accompanying the federal citation that the ranger, a federal law enforcement officer, gave Sheehy for illegally discharging his weapon in a national park. The citation said the description was based on Sheehy's telling of events. asked this week about the citation, which had not been previously reported, Sheehy told the Washington Post that the statement he gave to the ranger was a lie. He said he made up the story about the gun going off to protect himself and his former platoon mates from facing a potential military investigation into an old bullet wound that he said he got in Afghanistan in 2012. He said he did not know for certain whether the wound was the result of friendly fire or from enemy ammunition, and said that he never reported the incident to his superiors. Well,
how would you not know?
Well,
I don't know. There's just so many. There's just so many bullets going all over the place. Like when they started firing, I started experiencing peer pressure, and I started firing at myself.
I don't know. It's just a butterfingers, and that's embarrassing for everyone.
Yeah. This makes me think of the greatest event in human history when that FBI agent did a backflip in car and then his gun went off.
Yeah.
I just remember my dad falling out of a deer blind drunk because he fell asleep at 4 a.m. And like, you know, the gun didn't shoot him, but he got like buckshot embedded in his knee. And then he kind of ignored it for a while. And then he kept swelling and getting hot. And he had a fever. He ended up just being like, all right. And then he sterilized like a straight razor with a lighter, got some needle nose pliers, sterilized those, and pulled out the piece of buckshot. I don't know. It had to have gone straight through, right? Because like that would result in an insane infection, wouldn't it? And I don't think he has the redneck balls to go in with a pair of needle nose pliers and yank it out of his knee.
Well, I mean, according to him, he says he has a bullet stuck in his arm. So like he says the bullet is still in his arm. So that would seem to be like there is an answer to the question of whether it was friendly fire or from an enemy combatant. They could just take the bullet out of his arm and do some forensic analysis on it, don't you think?
I would think so.
So wait, just for me to clarify, knowing everything we know about the SEALs, his answer is not, I accidentally shot myself. It's that I received a bullet wound under mysterious and unreported circumstances in the line of duty that I felt compelled to cover up later with a false story for the protection of myself and my platoon.
Yeah, this he was is a Scooby-Doo-ass, like, weird mystery. Like, this doesn't... I could think of a better lie, I think, on the fly.
I fell on the bullet.
So, like, years after the incident in question, he opens himself up to a charge of illegally discharging a firearm in a national park to backstop a story about whether someone was shot by friendly fire or an enemy combatant. I don't know. I mean, it's probably just a fine, right? Discharging a firearm in a national park. I mean, I don't know how serious a charge that would be. But it says here...
I mean, that is a federal gun charge. You I think you'd at least go to prison for that in most circumstances, I feel.
It's like, when the Plaxico Burress, the Giants wide receiver, went to jail for 5 years because he had a pistol in the waistband of his sweatpants walking into a nightclub and it fell out of his waist and shot himself in the leg.
That's the real sweatpants challenge.
Yeah, seriously.
I always like felt really bad for him for that. Like, obviously it's like bad to do and like they shouldn't just like let you do that. Like that isn't one of those things where the cop lets you off with a warning if they're cool. But it is like it's like one of those things where it's like you think you lost something and you buy a new one, but it was in your pocket all along. You're just like, like one of those things where you're like, oh, I feel so stupid, except he ruined his fucking entire life.
Yeah.
You could have just not brought the gun to the strip club.
Well, I mean, you know, always be prepared. But just a little bit more from this story here. It says, she said he did not shoot himself in the park in 2015, but rather fell and hurt himself on a hike necessitating a trip to the emergency room where he told the hospital staff he had a bullet in his arm, triggering his interview with the ranger. So he's like, so I fell on a hike, but in the emergency room, he's like, oh, by the way, there's also a bullet in my arm right now, but that's unrelated to the fall I took on this hike. Don't worry about it. It's not a problem. Could you just treat the splinters that I have in my hand.
It is really funny when Navy SEALs like get back from deployment and try to do like the type of lies that they do in a deployment zone to civilians. Like they think they've been able to get away with all these things because they're such genius liars, and not because it's like
it's a war zone and you can kill people and get away with it very easily.
And also that they specifically are like, they're the tip of the spear for the U.S. security state, and it's recognized that they're like going to get their hands dirty and do a ton of illegal things. So it's just kind of like a don't get caught type thing. But when you like, when you get back to civilian life and you, I don't know what you were actually doing. You were like playing with whippets and then were trying to juggle both of your guns. And then this happened and you try to lie to the doctor the same way you would lie to your CO.
Yeah. He says here, I guess the only thing I'm guilty of is admitting to doing something I never did. Well, I mean, like when you say it like that, it's
okay.
Like,
then
it's
why did you admit it? Like, what the fuck?
What do you think a lie is?
I guess the only thing I am guilty of is lying to a federal officer in the course of an investigation. Well, if so, send me to prison.
If crimes are illegal, yeah, lock me up.
And it's like, well, then why did you say that? Like, if it isn't true, like, why? Like, it's just, yeah, it boggles the mind.
But okay, so he said he did pay the $525 fine for illegally discharging his weapon in the national park. He now says the gun never went off in the park. He added, of his platoon mates, it was a small price to pay to make sure that the whole team of really great Americans didn't get dragged through the mud over this. Like, over what? Like, a friendly fire incident? Okay. Was it Pat Tillman's platoon? Yeah. So it says here, asked why he wrote in his book that he was actually shot by friendly fire in Afghanistan after he said he lied to the ranger about the incident in 2015. Sheehy said that the passage of time had eased his fears over his old injuries, sparking a military investigation. Sheehy's account this week came as a surprise to the ranger. In several interviews of the Post, the ranger said that Sheehy showed him the weapon that Sheehy said he had accidentally discharged. The ranger said he recalls that the firearm was in a holster in Sheehy's vehicle, fully loaded except for one missing bullet.
Where did it go?
Sheehy went on to say that the bullet was taken out of his gun by a large bear aided by a slightly smaller bear. his picnic basket was also pillaged.
After all, I'm smarter than the average bear.
Well, hello there, ho diddly-omie. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to hand over that picnic.
Homie, it's not very nice to
maul
Ranger Ned.
You want some of
this? So yeah, that's another great edition of Navy SEALs and the stories they tell, the yarns they spin to explain why there's a bullet in themselves or other people.
The last time a Navy SEAL like ran for office and it even went like somewhat normally was Bob Carey, and then it turned out he won the child killing Olympics.
Yeah,
but everyone since then, like, they can't even make it through the primary without like an insane lie coming out. You would figure that being a Navy SEAL in Republican politics would be like, you know, I, you know, like being the only guy who's 6'3" in high school or something. You're playing on easy mode.
Yeah,
but no.
So moving on to a story from across the pond. So we haven't checked in the UK in a while. Are you guys aware that there is a massive honeypot / spear phishing scandal going on in the UK involving many MPs being catfished by essentially WhatsApp messages and them sending their dicks, and then people think it's China or something? I don't know. There are some naughty lads over there in the UK, and I just want to check in on this story for a second. This is 7 takeaways from Westminster's honey trap sex photos scandal. It says here
only 7.
Yeah. British politics has been unsettled by talk of honey traps and blackmail after more than a dozen men in UK politics were sent flirtatious messages on WhatsApp.
I want to see these flirtatious messages. They're like, "Oi, you want to see my knickers, governor?" Like, what is flirting for these people?
It goes, "Hello, love. I'll have a little bit of that, if you don't mind." The messages from 2 suspicious mobile numbers to MPs, aides, and journalists revealed by Politico Wednesday escalated in several cases to the sender sharing explicit images. In at least one case, a target reciprocated. Police are investigating, and the House of Commons speaker has urged MPs to come forward if they've received similar messages. Politico rounds up 7 key points we've learned about the suspected spear phishing attack, a personalized form of phishing meant to gather compromising information on a victim. So, number 1, there is a telltale modus operandi. All the suspicious messages on WhatsApp were from to one of two mobile numbers by users calling themselves alternatively Abby or Charlie, intended to start the same way. The sender claims to have met the recipient at a recent political event or venue, such as Westminster, the Westminster Bar, a party conference, or on a local by-election campaign. The sender then typically voices faux embarrassment at not being remembered by their target. In several previous cases, the sender...
that's easy. People are like, oh no, I totally remember you. I had a friend who worked in a fucking like a geriatric ward, and she said that one of the things that really annoyed her about portrayals of dementia on TV was that people never say, "Who are you?" Even when like they have dementia, they just lie and do what we all do.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, totally. Yeah, what's up? How have you been?
That's like 90% of the people I meet.
That's like, even when you are literally losing your marbles, you hold on to that shame of, and embarrassment of not being able to remember someone.
You're that kid in the house I used to live in. You were there all the time. What's up? How you doing these days? But I think that's kind of brilliant, though, like, because it's just like, to sort of like immediately put someone on their back foot, just be like, oh, you don't remember me? And then you feel like, I don't know, guilty in some way. So you're like, oh, yeah, of course, Abby. I remember seeing you at Westminster by Hudson.
Yeah, it's especially smart to do with, like, you know, sort of posh British people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I assume Britain is one of those countries where if you forget someone who is like an acquaintance, you have to kill yourself.
Probably.
You know, it's like Sengoku era Japan.
Yeah. I mean, they are European Japan. Imperialist nation, imperialist island nation, love gardens, tea, pedophiles.
Wow, wait. But they don't love ritualized suicide. I mean, like, I remember when was the bridge on the River Kwai, the Japanese colonel says to Alec Guinness as he's torturing him, he says, "I hate the British. You have pride but no shame."
I mean, there's definitely some distinctions there, but like, you know, they're cousins, if not brothers.
Yeah,
they're cousins. Like, the Japanese have so much of their own stuff, and like, you know, I'm a big Japan guy, obviously, but like, I could not live my life as a one of the Japanese guys from one of my movies. You know, like,
all their houses are too clean. Everything's too organized.
We don't have that kind of discipline. We don't have that kind of, like, you know, you got to be raised in that.
Yeah, it's like the stuff, at least I don't think normal Japanese guys are like this, but like, you know, a Yakuza guy or a samurai, the guys from my movies, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff they kill themselves over is insane. Like, if you're a samurai or a Yakuza guy and you, like, you're flying to the same destination with your friend and you upgrade your seat and he doesn't, both of you have to kill yourself. Like, I would have had to kill myself 378 times if I was in the Yakuza by now. There's just so many little things I do every day that are like, they are supposed to cause you and like everyone you know and like your brother who isn't in the Yakuza, all of you kill yourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think like they watch Throne of Blood and it's like, you know, an adaptation of Macbeth, which again, there's parallels. But the audience response must have been very different. They're like, yeah, that's normal. Like, that's a good wife. Like, she's really supportive.
Japanese remake of Curb Your Enthusiasm lasts only one episode after Larry David's song commits suicide.
And it's 6 minutes long.
Yeah. Felix Amber, by the way, I mean, as long as you're talking about Felix Amber, are either of you watching Shogun?
No, but I totally will. Yep. I need a new show. I think I'm gonna try it.
I was excited to see it, but then I saw they did this is happening, but in period accurate dialogue. And it tampered my enthusiasm for it. Maybe the entire show isn't like that. I don't know. I haven't seen it. But
for me it's either gonna be that or Reacher. Like
Reacher's solid.
I think I might get into Reacher.
Yeah, you should. You should read the books, too.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you should read the books.
There are books?
There's like 40 Reacher books. Lee Child. Yeah,
it's like the Baby Sitters Club.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's like yeah.
The Jack Reacher books are like Beverly Cleary for men.
Yeah, they're cool. They're really good.
Ramona Reacher, I love that.
It is. It's about like just the biggest guy ever goes from town to town, like beating the shit out of people, but like bad people.
Yeah, like if there are bad people in your area, like extorting and intimidating people, killing people, you better hope Reacher doesn't come to town if you're one of them. If you're one of the bad guys, ooh boy. It's not going to go well for you. It's going to go pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a cousin, like, you know, speaking of things that are related but not entirely similar, it seems like a cousin to Banshee.
Reacher is not as like gonzo and insane as Banshee.
Right.
But it has the same fun, like, you know, violence. Let's put it that way.
I think it's the difference between like the over 45s and the under 40s, and the overlap for Reacher and Banshee is like 40 to 45. Like the big pitch I saw through some sort of video was like, you know, do you not get along with your dad? Do you need something to talk about with your dad? Watch Reacher. The whole thing is that, like, he's really big. I don't want to butcher this guy's video, but he's like, he's really big, and people try and get him, but like, he's too big.
He's too big.
Reacher is like, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm sad that my dad didn't get to see it. It was this exact type of thing. Like a 60-year-old man, that is their favorite type of show. Like a thing where it's just like a traveling super soldier who can kill anyone. And they're like, this isn't stupid.
See, the thing about Reacher is that he is he's a man beast. He's a man giant, but he's also one of the most skilled investigators in America. He's a genius detective in addition to someone who could crush your head like a grape with one hand.
That is my favorite type of character. Like the guy who can beat the shit out of everyone, one man army, can take out 20 guys with guns. But he's like, oh, also, I'm a PhD level like biochemist just from like going to the library.
Yeah, it's like the dude on the Mayans who's like, you know, a biker thug, but also has a photographic memory like Sherlock Holmes.
That was one of the greatest characters. That was so fucking funny.
That was during the Savant years when the male version was like every show was about or had a savant, and every female show is about a woman that like solved crimes with ghosts.
yeah.
Oh, have you been watching Medium with Patricia Arquette?
Well, there's the one with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Ghost, yeah. Ghost Whisperer, was that it? Ghost Whisperer?
I don't know. I feel like there were 90 of those and 90 autistic man shows. And, you know, it was a war of the sexes, really. Ghosts versus autism.
Before we move on from TV, I would just like to go back to the Shogun and say I have to give a Hell on Earth seal of approval for 17th century excellence for Shogun.
Hell yeah.
Early on in the series, some good depictions of the perfidious Dutch. Excellent in the first episode, interrogations of various inter-Christian disputes. And in, I think, the fourth episode, some of the gnarliest canon violence I have ever seen in any media, really. So, that's a do watch for me.
Some guys get turned into just to stew.
The Dutch don't get enough credit for being absolute freaks. I think my boyfriend said the Dutch are just perverts on bicycles.
Yeah. War in the 17th century on boats.
Yeah.
They like
green transportation and really freaky shit.
Yeah, no, but I was going to just bring back to Shogun for a second. Lord Toranaga is both wise and just. But one of the things I like about feudal Japan is that, like, you can get a letter delivered in the mail that's just like, yeah, so about that, the Council of Regents is ordering you to kill yourself. So good luck with that, but you better be dead the next time we see you. And then, like, there's a scene where, like, yeah, like they're having dinner. And someone's uncle takes great pleasure in giving his nephew a letter that orders him to kill himself by slitting his fucking stomach open. And then right, he's like, he's reaching for the letter, and then his dad is like, "Don't take it! Don't accept the letter! Let it drop! If you accept the letter, then you have to kill yourself." Yeah,
that is very Uncle Dark.
Yeah.
That's wrong. Yeah. We don't believe in that shit here.
Well, we got pretty far afield from the British spearfishing honeypot scandal, but there's a few more interesting things to share from this case. It says here, in several cases, the sender uses near identical language, claiming they and their target previously had a little flirt, and quickly escalates to sending an explicit photo. When the target, in most cases, goes silent, the sender pesters them over several days to elicit a response. In one case, the sender messaged, "Say something. Hey, I'm really sorry. And much planned for the long weekend?" I mean, like, this is sort of like similar to putting someone on the back foot by pretending that you saw them at some event and just being like, "Oh, you don't remember me?" Then you send them nudes, and then like you're just like, "Well, I sent you my nude. Where's yours? Well, where's the follow up?"
I mean, like, if you think about it, think about how drunk the British are. Like, you know, the whole vilification about the Irish about drinking. The Irish just drink like Europeans. They're just a little drunk all the time. They're marathon runners. The British are sprinters. They binge. They black out.
Pubs close at 11.
Like, yes, and that's the thing. They gotta dash to the finish line.
Gotta get run about 20 pints through their liver.
Yeah, they probably like have tons of nights like that they don't remember. So it's probably very plausible.
It says here, many of the messages contain striking personalized reference that made their targets more likely to be taken in. The sender would alternatively refer to themselves as a man when contacting gay men or a woman when contacting straight men. Two people were sent references to their work on the Mid-Bedfordshire by-election of October 2023. One of these messages discussing their work on the Nandy campaign, Labour MP Lisa Nandy stood for the party leadership in 2020. A third person was told they had previously met the messenger in the Sports, a nickname for the UK Parliament Woolsack Bar, formerly called the Sports and Social Club. A fourth was told they were met by the sender at the annual Labour Party conference in Manchester. A fifth was asked if they still worked for their current boss. The sixth, a broadcaster, was asked how they and their boyfriend, whom the sender correctly named, were doing. "Was V nice to hear from you on the radio yesterday," the sender added. A seventh, the former MP, was told, "We miss you in Westminster." And then the third thing that you need to know about this, all the targets are men. What a shock there. What a shock there. And I'm just
even
wondering, like,
British women aren't going to respond to a dick pic with like,
would you like to see my knickers, love? But no, like, Amber, when I saw this, like, you know, all the targets, gay or straight, are men. And I'm like, well, yeah, like, obviously that's the whole point of a honeypot operation. But I'm just trying to wonder, like, if the nefarious state actors, be they Russia or China behind these WhatsApp account, if they were trying to catfish a female politician, like, what would the
Taylor
approach
Swift
have
tickets.
To be to get?
Because these are basic bitches. Like, it's very easy. If you're in politics like that, it's not like you have like weird, you're not listening to Captain Beefheart and you don't want dick pics. Like, it's just, that's easy. Just pick the most basic thing you can think of. And they'd be like, "Ah, I love you."
I can get you Taylor Swift tickets in exchange for nude images of you.
Yeah,
I mean, like, that's what was being used as the leverage here, which I think is a little bit, you know, I guess it's like, it's obviously deeply embarrassing, but like, this is the UK we're talking about. Like, well, it's like, oh, it's some scandal that like, an MP got a bit naughty and had a wink.
I think if I was ever in a position where I had to honeypot a woman for intelligence purposes, like, immediately starting out, I'm not doing any sex stuff. I'm just cold messaging her. And I'm going, "You're completely right about Florence at work. She's a bitch."
Felix,
they do need to turn up the thermostat.
Felix, I literally, like, a shiver ran up my spine when you said on this show, quote, "If I ever have to honeypot a woman for intelligence purposes," because I know of at least three or four women who listen to this show who have now received that transmission and are in a car on their way to your house right now.
Ladies, if you're any of these three or four wonderful gals, if you come to my house with a gun, let me have it.
And then just like a follow-up story to this sexting scam story is basically the patient zero for all of this was a senior conservative lawmaker in Rishi Sunak's government who says he is, quote, mortified. He said he admitted to having shared an intimate photo of himself and his along with his colleague's personal phone numbers as a result of a spear phishing attack.
Why were the phone? Should she say she had a fetish for phone numbers? Like, how? Why did that get involved?
Well, it says here, then late Thursday, a piece of the puzzle fell into place. Lawmaker William Ragg, 36, came forward to apologize for having given out people's personal contacts. He said he had been blackmailed by someone he met on the dating app Grindr. He had willingly sent an explicit photo of himself, he said, which was then used as compromat. Speaking to the Times of London, Ragg said, they had compromising things on me. They said they wouldn't leave me alone. They would ask people. They would ask for people. I gave them some numbers, not all of them. I told him to stop. He's manipulated me, and now I've hurt other people. So, like, this is like a senior member of the Tory government is letting himself get pressured because he sent a guy his dick on Grindr. Like, he's giving up the personal information of contacts in the UK government that's now being used to spy. These are some fucking... Dude, they need to bring back the spirit of Dunkirk. You know, once you realize you've been... once you realize you're like, they're holding your dick hostage because... But, like, you're on Grindr. Like, isn't it... I don't get what, like, how it, strong
you're
the...
You're using Grindr to do that? Is there no honor? Like, it really, like, is there no such thing as a safe space anymore?
I hate how the guy used compromat. Everyone does that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no one ever like blackmailed each other with, you know, the worst 50-year-old man nudes ever until Russia came along in 2015.
Yeah. Maybe compromat if they had, you know, like a photo of him sacrificing a child in the Tower of London. But it was just, yeah. Like, yeah. Come on, this is just what people do now. They send their dicks to each other on the internet. It's like, I don't know, maybe the guy has a wife and kid, but once again, this is the UK we're talking about. They probably get spanked by each other at like official state events and stuff like that. This is like, I just these guys seem really weak to me. They're like, these are weak. These are, you know, like someone's telling, you know, like someone's telling, you know what I mean? Like these are not, these ops are, they got you too easy.
Also, if everyone's junk is out, like, why do you care? It would be way worse if there was just like three people who got. But it sounds like it sounds like there's a wanker's row of all these guys.
Like, weren't these guys doing all this shit at boarding school? I mean, like, I don't get what, like, they're like, oh, it'd be so embarrassing if someone knew what my dick looked like. It's like, well, you know, I mean, like, there are worse things that can happen.
Oh, maybe it's a fetish. Maybe they want it to be, maybe like, oh, I don't want, you know, like they can't just straight up be flashers, you know, but like they probably are like into that and they found a way around. You know what? I'm calling it inside job. They're all just like, I want my nudes to leak. That would really get my jollies off. So they just all coordinated and leaked their own nudes. It's been done before.
Well, now they're blaming it on China.
You know, at first, this is the kind of story, it's all over the front page of the Daily Mail, and, you know, it's the sort of story that makes you laugh a bit and slightly titillating and all that, but it's actually quite serious.
Yeah.
That a number of people, including apparently at least one former cabinet minister, several MPs, journalists, Westminster staff, have been specifically targeted by cyber attacks, which... comprise sexy looking girls called Abby and Charlie saying, hey, let's get together, do you remember me and all that. So I guess we smell the rancid hand of China or Russia here, don't we?
I think we do.
Moving on to the last story of the day. This is a follow-up on a story I know we covered a while back on the show, but I would just like to share with everyone now a very humorous account of Kanye West Donda Academy that Rolling Stone turned in. Headline: Kanye West wanted to cage Donda students and threatened to punch staffer. Threatening to punch someone is one thing, but threatening to cage students is another. But you know what? He's a genius. It says here, a former Yeezy and Donda Academy employee claimed Kanye West wanted to install a jail at his school to cage students, threatened to punch him during a temper tantrum, and gave preferential treatment to white employees, according to a new lawsuit obtained by Rolling Stone. Trevor Phillips filed a suit against the rapper, who now goes by Ye, on Tuesday in Los Angeles, joining a number of former employees who are suing the 46-year-old. The 42-page complaint gives behind-the-scenes look at what Phillips says it's like to work for the eccentric artist, including spontaneous firings, a late-night summons to Nobu, watching The Batman on mute, and awkwardly navigating Yay pretending to masturbate. A rep for West did not immediately reply to a request for comment.
Wait, one of these things is not like the other one. What's the Batman one?
Watching the movie The Batman on mute.
Is that bad?
Yeah, I mean, like,
Amber, I've seen that movie, and yes, it is that bad.
But I prefer to watch it on mute. With the sound?
No, it's better, in fact, without. So I'm with Yay on that one.
He's doing a service.
A late night summons to Nobu. That sounds fun. What is this guy complaining about? He probably gets.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to go to Nobu at 12 o'clock at night? That's what.
Yeah,
the cool
as long as he's picking up the check, for sure.
Yeah, somehow I doubt he did. But it says here, coming on board weeks after Ye's fallout with Adidas and Gap over his anti-Semitic remarks, Phillips claims Ye continued to double down and make statements throughout his employment. Ye also threatened to go after the LGBTQ community next, according to the suit, because gay people are controlled by Bill Gates, so they don't have children for population control.
First of all, he may have finally punched above his weight. That simply will not work. I mean, honestly, he's unworthy of their scorn, but if he ever got to annoying the gay mafia, oh, God, if he went to Gay City, if he got even close to Gay City, he would straight up be bombed.
David Geffen would make the shit in Buckbreaking look like I don't even know. You know, that's not an enemy he wants to have.
No.
Buck obliteration.
Yeah,
I just like the idea that Bill Gates is in control of the gay community. I mean, if that's the case, they need to start dressing him better. Am I right? Have you seen? Some of Ye's dangerous rhetoric was repeated in front of Donda Academy students, according to the suit. And Ye allegedly once told two children that he wanted them to shave their heads, and that he intended to put a jail at the school so that they could be locked in cages.
Maybe he's trying to find the next Dalai Lama.
This really proves how annoying he is, because it's like he should have been invited to those Diddy parties where you are locking children in cages and all that stuff. But like, he's clearly likes to do that. But even Diddy was like, no, he's too annoying.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, there's something about his like, shall we say, vibe that is so off-putting. You're actually kind of impressed that he's had this many collabs that didn't blow up over like an anti-Semitism scandal. And I think people, every time they're like, we need to have a talk about mental health, it's like, okay, well, sometimes it looks like that guy. That's the most annoying guy. Like, mental health isn't always like, hey, I have anxiety. Sometimes it's just being clinically fucking annoying.
Yeah, it's completely that. And it's not always like a resources problem. Oftentimes it is, but like sometimes someone
he's having
has
too many resources.
Yeah.
I like the detail about quote wanting to shave students' heads, like what he's like in the Dutch resistance and World War II just ended, except instead of sleeping with Nazis, it's like listening to Drake. Phillips says he was hired in November 2022 to work for the fashion line Yeezy around a month after the rapper paraded a White Lives Matter shirt down the runway at his brand's Paris Fashion Week show. So once again, with this guy, it's sort of like, you know, we've talked about this a lot on the show, like the classic Amy Klobuchar staffer story, where it's just like, I don't really have any sympathy, because he's making clear that I chose to work for this crazy person after he said, I love Hitler to the entire planet.
Yeah, it's not like this was Kanye in like 2008. This was Kanye after he was like, Hitler invented the microphone.
When is someone going to do a disrespectful track about Kanye West? They're all too afraid. They're all too afraid because they're going to be put in cages and have their head shaved. So it says here, the widespread criticism from the spectacle led to Lié unleashing a stream of anti-Semitic rhetoric, which prompted Adidas and Gap to sever their business relationships with Yeezy. Phillips' role in what Lié dubbed the vertically integrated crew was now to oversee projects related to growing cotton and other plants to use as materials for Yeezy products. But because of the continued fallout, Phillips' job quickly blended into work for the rapper's private Christian school, Donda Academy, and a future self-sustainable community project. So,
then we're gonna harvest sugarcane. Like, this is like a little.
I mean, it's
more than a little, but it's like, I don't know how. I believe he is too mentally ill to cancel, which, you know, is again, he allows us to have serious conversations about mental health, but it's pretty impressive he went that far without someone just being like, no, you can't, no.
I love that, like, his idea, like, after getting dumped by Adidas in the Gap, his idea for the, quote, vertically integrated crew sounds a lot like recreating the triangle trade, but,
yeah.
But like,
but first the we make rum, yeah, but with, and then we, yeah.
Yeah. It says here, while spending time at the Donda Academy, Phillips' claim is that Ye began spreading anti-Semitism in school meetings, including in front of some students. Other inappropriate commentary included Ye saying that he only likes to date white women and telling employees that no one could be fat, otherwise they'd be fired. Ye also allegedly boasted that he used $2 million of the school's budget to splash out on a trip to Paris. In one strange encounter in December 2022, Phillips said Ye requested they meet at Nobu Hotel in Malibu to discuss business plans. Over the next 3 hours, Phillips describes feeling uncomfortable as Ye went on to rant about Hitler's greatness, said the Holocaust was fake, and said gay people are not true Christians. At some point, Phillips said Ye had the hotel staff come to his room and put on 2022's The Batman with the two men watching the movie on mute in silence.
Well, that sounds like the best part. Stopped talking.
It sounds romantic, like, really.
He's not in danger of like killing his entire family. He's just like stimming to that movie that he likes for some reason. again, it's like this guy, he worked for Kanye after, you know, the Hitler microphone thing. And it's like, dude, did you think that was like an act? Like, come on. This is a high class version of the guy who makes ends meet by pretending to trip and fall in front of libraries every month.
Yeah, no, I mean, but like, this is just a more committed, like I feel like Vincent Gallo looks at him and he's like, whoa, buddy, you got to slow down there.
He's got to start selling his sperm.
By the way, if anyone out there is thinking of buying Vincent Gallo's sperm online, it tastes terrible.
It wasn't just that they were watching The Batman on mute. It said, while lying flat on the bed, Phillips claims that Ye began to make slow up and down motions with his hand just above his genitals as though he was masturbating and talking about his sex life, according to the lawsuit. The rapper then FaceTimed a woman who he then instructed to wear lingerie and shoes he bought for her.
Yeah, he was more into the shoes. It's not that he's like gay, it's that he's sort of like non-sexual, and Matt and I would talk about this, like there's certain people who just aren't sensualists. Like Trump isn't really a sensualist. Like you don't believe, like John Early had a bit about this where he was like, I don't believe he really meant grab her by the pussy. He's like, this is like what I would say when I was like high school and trying to convince the guys that I was straight. Like, it's very like, oh, I just love to grab her by the pussy. I mean, I'm not saying that makes it not sexual harassment. I'm just saying, I think he looks at he saw Kim Kardashian and saw a vase, like a very feminine shaped vase. Like, I don't think he gets like a horny. He has like a, what's it, paraphilia, where like people want to fuck roller coasters and stuff.
Yeah, I think like one of the most like condemnable things he does, and like this is what the ADL really should have come out against, is he loves taking like a really beautiful woman and then like bleaching her eyebrows and making her wear saran wrap.
Yes. Yeah.
Making her get a bunch of surgeries where she has like a new caveman brow. He loves just like ruining a hot woman.
Yeah, he wants Betty Boop.
Yeah.
It says here, Phillips claims his relationship with Ye had soured by May 2023 after a series of minor misunderstandings, culminating in Ye throwing a temper tantrum and threatening to punch him. Ye was apparently unhappy with a garden Phillips was tending to and began screaming in front of a crowd for Phillips to get the fuck out of here and that he was fucking fired. Kanye then ran to the gardens and attempted to pick up and toss the garden, the lawsuit continues, but too weak and out of shape, failed to pick them up. Instead, he started pulling out the plants and individual pieces inside the boxes, ripping them apart, throwing them on the floor, and in a worse and more immature temper tantrum than any of the youngest Donda school children had ever thrown.
That's what I was gonna say. If Kanye West threatened to punch me, I would be like, bring it. That is not a man whose physical prowess I fear at all. I am pretty sure I could do that cartoon thing where I put my hand on his head while he would his fists would just keep swinging.
Yeah, he was not built for combat. Like, he is somehow biologically built for exactly what he does, which is, you know, making women wear dirty sweatshirts.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Kanye, just, you know, his temper tantrums aside, this violence he did to the garden, sir, you have offended both the kingdom of Great Britain and, of course, the island chain of Nippon.
Yeah, yeah, and you know what? Like, yeah, again, he's a different kind of pervert entirely. He's not that kind of pervert. But, like, he's probably destroying a woman's garden. And as we know, that's a pattern of misogyny.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I just wish, like, I wish I could send these articles back to 2014 when people were like,
yeah.
Every fucking new inquiry writer, every fucking like Jewish woman that went to Bard, who's like, he's amazing, he's a genius, I'll have a black friend one day. Like, it's just just shut up. I don't understand this insistence to believe that artists are smart. Some of the best,
especially
artists,
musicians.
Yes, the only people dumber than musicians are actors. Like, yeah, on average.
Musicians have to invent a fucking new language because they were too stupid and emotional to talk on our own. They had to invent music.
It's the most libidinal art form. Like, they don't have to be, like, smart. Like, there are different types of intelligence, to be sure. But you can be dumb as shit and make great music. Like, we need to get away from the genius narrative in general. It's too ubermensch. It's too Randian. I don't like it. Like, just accept that these are separate categories. And you don't need artists to be smart. You don't need musicians to have any kind of, like, intelligence. You just want some good tunes. Good tunes.
Yeah, I just wish I would have loved to have the knowledge that one day he's going to act like an anti-Semitic version of Eddie Murphy's character in Bowfinger.
Well, hold on a second, Emperor. You're claiming that musicians are not sort of Randian, Howard Rourke style ubermensches. I will simply leave you with this from the Rolling Stone article. The rapper then physically threatened Phillips, according to the suit, repeatedly saying he was going to punch you in the face before his mood suddenly shifted. Imitating the celebratory dance of Mario from the famous video game Super Mario Brothers, the suit claims Kanye jumped up with punching one fist into the air while he said, "I'm going to give you one more chance, another life."
He's going to... case closed. Next Kanye fashion collab, if he can find anyone who will deal with him, and he probably will because the fashion designers are stupid too, Tanuki suits. It's going to be fucking Tanuki suits.
It's better than the fucking garbage bags I see him wearing every time I see him walking around these days. What is up with that? He's wearing like these big goofy boots and a garbage bag everywhere. Like he's trying to steal Amazon packages from people with Ring cameras.
That's always been his fashion stuff though. He's always like dressed ever since he got into fashion, he's always dressed and had people dressed like Dennis Leary in Demolition Man.
All right. Well, that was that's the last story for today. I think we covered some good stuff. Ritual suicide, cheeky politicians getting spearfished in their honeypot. Good stuff today. Please don't send me any letters from a Council of Regents. I will ignore them. I will not. If I get a letter from the Council of Regents, I'm not even opening it.
Yeah. And so, if you out there, if you are experiencing mental health, just try to use your willpower to stop having it.
Just yeah,
that's the only message.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, that's the only message we can give to you. Try meditating until your brain's regular.
Amen. Amen, everybody. Oh, and I guess before we leave, I'd like to plug one time May 4th at Littlefield. Hessa and I will be hosting a screening of Death Wish 3 starring Charles Bronson, a feel-good classic. It's if you're from New York City, this movie is like, you know, it's like the Bible. Death Wish 3, going to be a lot of fun. So May 4th at Littlefield, kicking off Movie Mindset Season 2. Please come out and watch a movie that I'm really, really excited to watch in a audience. I've never seen this movie in a theater or with a crowd of people because, man, it is a banger.
I will just say some quick notes on that screening. I think we only have like 2 hours between when the movie starts and sign off, or 2.5 hours, and it's a 90-minute film. So we will be starting the movie promptly when the show is supposed to start, which I think is like 7:30. It goes until 9. We'll take a short break. Will and Hessa will do a talk back, but it will be starting right on time.
Yeah, we'll do like a mini episode about Death Wish 3 after Death Wish 3. But yes, the movie will be starting promptly at 7:30. All right. Till next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.